This is Tom Rowe with the WGXC News, a roundup of some of the best citizen journalism interviews and recordings made by WGXC volunteers in the past week. Today, Tanya Blue talks to local stonemason and preservationist Tim Smith about his work with the Agawamic Project and the General Worth House in Hudson. Then Richard Roth talks with Susan Boudreau about the Claremont Historic Sites ghost tours now through Halloween. Lisa Harris and Julia Reichel from the Watershed Post report on some area events, as does Ellen Thurston. And Glenn Koopman of HW Coffee records the Cairo Planning Board meeting about the possible new Hannaford's grocery store in Cairo. All on the WGXC News.
So you're working with B?
Yes.
Okay.
B and I work together on a project called the Agawamic Project, which is really inspired by Ruskin Mills Trust in England, where they've taken just a huge amount of kids that are at risk and got them, you know, restoring historic sites. In Ruskin Mills, they restored an old mill, and then they turned it into a five-star restaurant. And the kids became the cooks. They became the waiters.
Ruskin Mills is in England?
Yeah, Ruskin Mills is in England. So that, and Bea worked there. Bea Birch worked there. And she came over here and she could just see this gaping thing that we're doing nothing with our kids. So she inspired me to start to get more, you know, organized with a foundation that could take kids and put them to work and get it. I actually explained it a different way. For the last 5 or 6 years, this country's been fascinated by a book or a movie called Horse Whispers.
Yes.
Where horses that have been totally traumatized have been able to be saved and brought back to normal.
Yes.
By people that are very sensitive, and they pretty much put them in a corral, and then they sit in the middle of the corral and they say nothing, and they get the horse to trust them. And then the horse...
So you're doing that with kids.
Yeah. So my idea is, why should we do that with horses? Why don't we do it with our kids? They're traumatized. They're living in a world that they don't understand, and they don't understand how they can... So that's basically what we do.
So you start with kids that have some kind of record?
We actually get them out of prison. Yeah. We can get them out of prison a year ahead on their time.
And what's the age range?
Well, the typical one is 18 to 24.
Okay.
But we've had kids from the high school that were 14, and we put them to work on real job sites, and they've done really well. They loved it. And the school would deliver them to the job site. They would work for 4 hours in the afternoon, and then the school bus would pick them up and bring them home, and they go to school in the morning, and they stay in school. We tell them they can't be in this program unless they stay in school.
So the after-school program starts at what time?
Well, we switch their schedules around.
You do, okay.
So we can get them by 1 o'clock, they could be on a job site. And it's been 100% successful.
So give me an example of a job site.
We're restoring a house in Hudson called the General Worth House.
The General Worth House? And
yes.
Where's that?
It's on 2nd Street and Union.
Okay.
And it's very, very old brick house.
Yes, it's beautiful.
Yeah, and we put a stone sidewalk in. There are 8 fireplaces. We restored all of the 8 fireplaces. We restored the stone foundation in the wintertime when we first started. It had a stone foundation. One whole side had dilapidated. We rebuilt the whole side.
So you and the kids are starting work there.
We're there all day.
You're there
the kids
all day.
Get delivered
okay.
there.
The kids get delivered there.
They come right in the middle and they just jump into work. One kid that I had that was 14, I would never have to tell him what to do because he was so hot to get to the job site that he would just look to see what needed to be done, and he'd just start doing it and then leave at 4 and came every day. So this is a big breakthrough because not all the schools have this intern program. But I'll give you another example from Taconic Hills, where the school board sanctioned this. By the way, they're insuring the kids too, so that is a huge breakthrough.
The school board is.
So if the kid happened
to
cut his hand off or something,
Taconic Hills.
The other schools are slowly seeing that this is. Most schools now are experiencing a 20% dropout rate. And that's obscene. We can't allow that. Anyway, yeah, now we're working on the Chatham Clock Tower, which is in Chatham. We did such a good job on that the owner of the next building wants us to continue just doing the repointing of the walls and everything.
So are you going to be working on the clock at all?
No, the clock, by the way, is high up.
Yeah.
It's in perfect shape, and it has to be wound every week. So while we were working there, it was kind of fun because they had to send somebody up to the tower to wind the clock by hand. But that's a beautiful clock, and it was fun working on that.
Are you doing that next week? Or
we're going to be next week on that, on the wall next to the clock tower, because the owner of the next building just... He liked what our kids were doing so well that he just hired us to do his building, too.
Oh, the building right next to it.
Yeah. Well, they have...
Are there some shops there?
Yeah. One shop is not only vegan, but it sells clothes where no animals are killed. Now, I forgot what that's called, but it's so fascinating. No animal has had to be killed to make these clothes. Her name is Donna, and I would go visit her shop. It's really interesting. That's where we're going to be.
Okay.
All next week.
In Chatham next week.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Tim Smith.
The 4th Annual Pumpkin Festival is scheduled for this Saturday throughout the village of Schoharie. There will be entertainment, contests, food, hayrides, pony rides, and of course there will be pumpkins.
There will also be free tarot card readings by psychic Lily, who moonlights as reporter Lillian Brown. She sometimes writes for us, actually, at the Andes Hotel this
We need to start
Saturday.
Getting her to write about the future, because
it
would be good to know.
I had no idea she was a psychic. Yeah, I wish she had told us.
An exhibit of aerial photos of Delaware County towns taken from the air. That would be the definition of aerial photos. Will be on display this Saturday at 678 Main Street in Hobart, and there will be a wine and cheese reception for photographer Cornell Vierlon at 4 p.m.
These events and more are featured in our This Weekend column, watershedpost.com/thisweekend.
Peter Biskind is a name to reckon with. He is a cultural critic and film historian, and is a contributing editor to Vanity Fair and has written many articles and 6 books, I believe. Peter was once the editor-in-chief of American Film Magazine, prestigious magazine, and the executive editor of Premiere, another film publication. And I saw you, I think, last year at the Opera House when you read from your book, Star, How Warren Beatty Seduced America. Interesting book. So you are now the co-programmer of the film festival with Larry Kardish?
Correct.
From the Museum of Modern Art?
Correct.
And tell us, if you can, how the film festival started. I assume that you were involved from the very beginning.
Yes, I've been there from the start. Well, the film festival, there was a film festival, a Columbia County Film Festival, that was limping along for a couple of years, essentially showing regional films from the area. But they ran out of those pretty quickly, and I think it was run by the Columbia Council on the Arts.
Right.
And meanwhile, in Chatham, we had a small organization, Chatham Film Club, which showed independent films twice a month, once a month, actually, at the Crandall Theater. And they asked us if we wanted to take over the festival. So we said, sure. Not quite realizing, I think, what that involved. So 10, 11, 12 years ago, we started running this festival, which at that time ran for 2 days, Saturday and Sunday. Festivals take a long time to establish themselves, at least especially small-town festivals, because, a lot of the, in terms of the films one is able to get, it depends a lot on where your festival is, what your demographics are, why should the distributors take you seriously and give you their films, what's in it for them. And so it takes a while to sort of to convince them that your festival is worth supporting, partly because of some of the books I've written. I have a lot of relationships among the distributors, and that helped a lot, because, as they say, the movie business is a relationship business. So it helps to know, to be able to pick up the phone and call X, Y, and Z and say, can I have this film and that film?
And you're a co-programmer with Larry Kardish?
Right. Larry is the film curator, or one of the film curators, at the Museum of Modern Art. And Larry's been a huge help, because it's hard to see all these films. They don't like to send out DVDs.
Mm-hmm.
And unless you're actually living in New York City or L.A., where they preview them a lot, it's hard to look at them. Larry's job is to travel around the world going to festivals. So he sees most of the films, not all, but most of the films that we program. And I rely on his, so I can just call him and ask him, is this film any good? What did you think of that one? Will this play in this area?
What a job. Not so, bad.
Yeah, he has a wonderful job. Many, many frequent flyer miles. So Larry's been a huge help. And over the years, gradually the festival has been able to get better and better films. So now we're in a rather enviable position of being able to pretty much skim the cream off the top of the big film festivals, the Cannes Film Festival, New York Film Festival, Telluride, mm-hmm. in Toronto. So, and that's what we've, I think this year we have four or five films that play the New York Film Festival, same with Telluride, same with Toronto. We have a couple of the, we often play the show, the Palme d'Or winner from Cannes. Mm-hmm. And so it's an opportunity for people in the area to see these films first before they get to the theaters, if they ever get to the theaters, and some of the films never do. I mean, we showed a film last year called The Debt, which just came out a year later. So it's a great opportunity, as I said, for people in the area to see independent and foreign films that they ordinarily wouldn't get a chance to see. Or
Peter Biskind is a name to reckon with. He is a cultural critic and film historian, and is a contributing editor to Vanity Fair and has written many articles and 6 books, I believe. Peter was once the editor-in-chief of American Film Magazine, prestigious magazine, and the executive editor of Premiere, another film publication. And I saw you, I think, last year at the Opera House when you read from your book, Star, How Warren Beatty Seduced America. Interesting book. So you are now the co-programmer of the film festival with Larry Kardish?
Correct.
From the Museum of Modern Art?
Correct.
And tell us, if you can, how the film festival started. I assume that you were involved from the very beginning.
Yes, I've been there from the start. Well, the film festival, there was a film festival, Columbia County Film Festival, that was limping along for a couple of years, essentially showing regional films from the area. But they ran out of those pretty quickly. And I think it was run by the Columbia Council on the Arts.
Right.
And meanwhile, in Chatham, we had a small organization, Chatham Film Club, which showed independent films twice a month, once a month, actually, at the Crandall Theater. And they asked us if we wanted to take over the festival. So we said, sure. Not quite realizing, I think, what that involved. So 10, 11, 12 years ago, we started running this festival, which at that time ran for 2 days, Saturday and Sunday. Festivals take a long time to establish themselves, mm-hmm. At least especially small-town festivals, because, in terms of the films one is able to get, it depends a lot on where your festival is, what your demographics are, you know, why should the distributors take you seriously and give you their films? What's in it for them? And so it takes a while to sort of, to convince them that your festival is worth supporting. Partly because of some of the books I've written, I have a lot of relationships among the distributors, and that helped a lot, because as they say, the movie business is a relationship business. So it helps to know, to be able to pick up the phone and call X, Y, and Z and say, can I have this film and that film?
And you're a co-programmer with Larry Kardish?
Right. Larry is the film curator, or one of the film curators at the Museum of Modern Art. And Larry's been a huge help, because it's hard to see all these films. You know, they don't like to send out DVDs. Mm-hmm. And unless you're actually living in New York City or L.A., where they preview them a lot, it's hard to look at them. Larry's job is to travel around the world going to festivals. So he sees most of the films, not all, but most of the films that we program. And I rely on his, so I can just call him and ask him, is this film any good? What'd you think of that one? Will this play in this area?
What a job. Not so bad.
Yeah, he has a wonderful job. Many, many frequent flyer miles. So Larry's been a huge help. And over the years, gradually the festival has been able to get better and better films. So now we're in a rather enviable position of being able to pretty much skim the cream off the top of the big film festivals, the Cannes Film Festival, New York Film Festival, Telluride, mm-hmm. in Toronto. So, and that's what I think this year we have four or five films that play the New York Film Festival, same with Telluride, same with Toronto. We have a couple of we often show the Palme d'Or winner from Cannes. Mm-hmm. And so it's an opportunity for people in the area to see these films first before they get to the theaters, if they ever get to the theaters, and some of the films never do. I mean, we showed a film last year called The Debt, which just came out a year later. So it's a great opportunity, as I said, for people in the area to see independent and foreign films that they ordinarily wouldn't get a chance to see. Or
this is Mr. Bill McKenney from Hannaford. He's going to be giving the presentation this evening on the Hannaford store. Once the presentation is done, that'll be the time that anybody in the audience can either make a statement or ask a question of us or of Mr. McKenney, and we'll do our best to answer any concerns or questions that you have. And with that, Mr. McKenney.
Thank you, Dan. As Dan mentioned, I'm Bill McKenney with Hannaford. So, Mr. Chairman, I'd be glad to try to answer any questions that the board might have.
I'm going to open it up to the public at this point in time. If anybody has any questions, just raise your hand and I'll see if I can acknowledge you. So, does anybody have any questions or concerns or comments they'd like to make regarding the proposed Hannaford store or the subdivision or the signs that are proposed? In the back. Hey, Janet.
Huh? Do you know how to spell my name?
I'll figure it out.
Okay. Hi, Jan Forsager. I'm Sarah Ward. I have had people not only from Cairo, but also the surrounding towns in Columbia County and Kingston ask me, is Hannaford's coming? So the interest in Hannaford's coming to Cairo is much more widespread than just Cairo. And I want to commend Hannaford and the town board for working on this project.
Concept that will really add to the town,
and we will welcome all the new shoppers.
Thank you.
Anybody else? Eddie Schindler, could you just give us the order of construction? What the?
Yeah, that's a good question. Since we're building on the existing site, it makes construction fairly complex. We do have a commitment to this site and redeveloping it. We think it's better to redevelop here, redevelop an existing shopping center. That's a little easier said than done, so construction will be fairly complex. So our plan is to build the retail shops building here first, and then the tenants will be moved over to that building. And then once the tenants have moved over, that'll open up the entire shopping center with the exception of the supermarket. But at that time, the supermarket will close and we'll demolish the old shopping center and then build our store and then the attendant site work. And we'll also, as I mentioned, propose to redo Lake Avenue as well. So that'll be part of the site work. So that's kind of a general overview. Stages of construction. We do need to keep in mind there are lots of details that to factor in, but there's access to the Smart Stop now, so we want to ensure that we maintain access here to the Smart Stop. We maintain access to the car wash. So we're operating businesses around the site that we want to ensure we maintain access to through construction. So typically, probably take 9 months or so to build a store, This will probably be a bit over a year, given the construction phasing, to finish up with the store and open it up.
Danny, I'm sorry, I apologize, I wasn't going to say anything. The time frame of Slater closing and new opening is going to be 8 to 9 months, you figured?
I think so. You know, in general, and this is a comment that the board had, there's a strong desire from a town standpoint, I think, to keep the supermarket open as long as possible. So we're trying to keep that time when the store's dark and it's not open as short as possible. But given this site, there is going to be that period of time when the supermarket's going to close. There won't be a supermarket there until we open.
So you think about 9 months?
Yes. And our retail, my sense is folks prefer not to hear something, you know, a shorter time frame, perhaps no time without a supermarket. But, you know, our retail folks have the same desire, so it's really up to me to ensure that we keep, you know, the dark time as short as possible. Because our retail folks have that same desire.
Right.
Yeah, my name's Art Zay. It's spelled last name Z-E-H. And I have to say that I think you did a good job. I've seen a lot of site plans. I'm an engineer. And, you know, as far as the site planning goes, I think it looks top-notch. And I have to commend you for going out of your way to improving the road, the drainage, the access, because the current access is too close to the signal light. So I see a lot of improvements there. I'm not quite sure why you put so many curved islands in the parking lot, and I would just be concerned about snow removal, questions about where are you going to put mechanical equipment for the main big box building, you know, screen, or on the roof or in a mechanical equipment room. But I like it. I think it's a good job. In fact, I think this is the best site plan I've seen in this town ever.
I'm Tom Rowe, and you've been listening to the WGXC News, a weekly roundup of interviews, recordings, and citizen journalism from WGXC volunteers made in the past week. You just heard Tanya Blue talk to local stonemason Tim Smith, as well as Richard Roth interview Susan Boudreau from the Clermont Historic Site about their ghost tours on the WGXC afternoon show. We also heard a little excerpt of the Watershed Post half-hour news hour talking about weekend events, and a little bit of Ellen Thurston interviewing Peter Siskind from the Columbia County Film Festival. And finally, you just heard Glenn Koopman's recording, Glenn Koopman from HW Coffee in Cairo, his recording of the Cairo Planning Board's meeting. And we heard the questions from the audience from the public hearing about the possible Hannaford grocery store going in, then heard from Bill McKenney from Hannaford's about their possible grocery store in Hannaford. We have time for a few more audio reports from you. First, WGXC's youth producer Olivia Williams from the Radio Explosion show Wednesdays at 3:30 p.m. on WGXC went to Zuccotti Park and visited Occupy Wall Street recently and gave the following impressions. And we'll close the show with a report from Free Speech Radio News about President Obama announcing all troops out of the Iraq war by the end of the year. Thank you for tuning in to WGXC News every Saturday at 8:30 a.m. and 6:30 p.m. on WGXC 90.7 FM, creative community radio for Greene and Columbia counties.
Being on Occupied Wall Street has changed my whole life completely. It taught me about fighting for democracy, about being the 99%, and fighting for a voice. Just when I first got there, I was so bum-rushed with music, with people, different groups representing different means of protesting. We went on Columbus Day. I'm not sure if Billy and Courtney said this already, but it's about, like, the white man, quote-unquote, you know, celebrating the oppression of Native Americans. That to me was like, whoa! And in the middle of the whole protest area was a Native American beating a drum on an angle far to, like, the right. There was people talking about you know, the oppression of Native Americans. And I was just like, wow.
President Obama announced the end of the Iraq War today and the withdrawal of U.S. troops by the end of the year.
After nearly 9 years, America's war in Iraq will be over. Over the next 2 months, our troops in Iraq, tens of thousands of them, will pack up their gear and board convoys for the journey home. The last American soldier will cross the border out of Iraq with their heads held high, proud of their success, and knowing that the American people stand united in our support for our troops. That is how America's military efforts in Iraq will end.
The president, who spoke to Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki this morning, said as of January 1, 2012, the U.S. relationship with the country will be between sovereign nations based on mutual interests and mutual respect. At a press conference following the announcement, Deputy National Security Advisor Dennis McDonough said U.S. troops and civilian staff have worked closely with Iraqi security forces to prepare them for U.S. withdrawal.
As we've done very intensively, frankly, over the course of the last 7 or 8 months, a full review of where we stand with the Iraqis, one assessment after another about the Iraqi security forces came back saying, these guys are ready, these guys are capable, these guys are proven. Importantly, they're proven because they've been tested in a lot of the kinds of threats that they're going to see going forward. So we feel very good about that.
Anti-war groups welcomed the move, but some, including Move On, said it's also time to end the Afghan war and redirect funding to communities and programs back home.